Well, you found us on a Thursday evening. Welcome to Caching in the Northwest. This is the only podcast dedicated to geocaching in the great Pacific Northwest. We're going to talk about caches and cachers unique to this little corner of the continent. So while you're trying to track down your pet that was shipped to another country, we'll be caching in the Northwest.
That's right. And that means it's time to bring in our rock-challenged monkey. Some say he can drink an entire gallon of milk in under a minute. And others say he can slam a revolving door. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Hey, guys, remind me to tell you the story about Mrs. Land Monkey and automated doors at shopping malls at some point in time. Not tonight.
Hardly wait.
And not on the air.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm just going to leave that teaser out there so that the next event people can come up to Mrs. Land Monkey and go, okay, I got to hear this story.
Tell me the story.
There you go.
You're a brave man. Oh, braver than I am.
Hey, I find the couch quite comfortable. I'm just saying.
Okay. All right. What about the doghouse?
Same thing. You know, another thing that I should remember, besides, you know, not telling stories about my wife on the podcast, is a quick reminder that we appreciate the support of our patrons who help to keep this podcast coming each and every week. And, you know, if you want to know more about supporting this show, as many people do, I am amazed at the number of people who support our show. And thank you, folks. We'll thank you each individually at the end of the show. But, you know, if you want to know more about that, click that Patreon link over there on that cachingnw.com website.
Please do learn all about it. We appreciate each and every one of them. And we appreciate guests that we have tonight. But first, before we get to our guest, we have to do our glow. That is our tradition to start our show with a glow. That's the geocaching log of the week. And this week's, it was submitted by CNW, it says. I think I've heard of CNW somewhere.
That might be me.
Might be. Might not be. I think it is. It's from It's from a cache called Tunnel of Fun, which is GC1EWZ9. And it was a log by Wrong Way Mommy. Let's get into this one. It says, having left the wilds of Spokane and North Idaho behind us, Blue Meanie and I were on a weekend adventure far from the demands of everyday life. Just he and I and all the trouble we could get ourselves into. Spots of no cellular zone, which sometimes is just what the doctor ordered, lazy nights in the hotel, and vigorous days adventuring. All the credit for the idea behind this trip goes to that man I love, quite possibly the absolute best Christmas present a girl could ask for, especially this girl. Busy days working, busy nights schooling, and two kids to boot, and I get a bit rough at the edges. Vacation bliss be mine, and I'm enjoying every second of our time together. I had eye-spied this a couple years ago almost now and thought better of it. Part of that was because we did have adventurous kids with us who would have felt left out, but the bulk of the reason was that I am afraid of heights and claustrophobic. That being said, during that visit to this location previously, I would have been the adult and forced the kids to stay behind had I had the proper motivation behind me. The support system needed to face one's fears, times two, and be successful with it. My boyfriend had been talking about this one, for he had done it before, and he knew my fears, and I had been listening. But he was being nice and just talking, not egging me on, not attempting to make me believe I had anything to prove. This time, I felt ready as I was ever going to be. Sometimes, all it takes is the right support to be able to face the demon on the inside and conquer it. He hopped over the rock wall and dropped from sight, and I about had a heart attack right then and there. Until he came up smiling, for he knew what he was doing and where he was going, and then it was my turn. Knees shaking and heart pounding, I followed him down to where I needed to be. Making every effort to not only look down on the big down as much as was required to make a safe descent, with hardly a word being spoken between us. He knew without a single vocalization from me that I was scared to high heavens and he wasn't about to break my concentration. Before I even got to the actual cache to sign the log, I felt victorious and alive in a way that I didn't know I could feel. Standing just out of reach of the log required, I was grinning from ear to ear. I had conquered one, now to the other. Another determined feeling rushed over me as I made the final haul to get my name happily on that log, with sounds all around me and my blood pounding in my veins. I won't lie. I was white as a sheet and shaking like a leaf, trembling as it were, with my heart pounding like a drummer in a marching band. But I did it. Victory is mine. I beat that which was holding me back. And the feeling of sheer accomplishment is one I simply cannot put into proper words. Thank you, Blue Meanie, for the support that I was missing. And thank you, CO, for this amazing, jaw-dropping, and utterly invigorating hide.
Wow, that's
wow!
Quite the story. Now I'm curious.
Really is quite the story, isn't it? Now, check
that out. Oregon.
Chris, you've done this one.
I have. In fact, as you were reading that log, I was going through my old photos and and found it is one of my, I hadn't looked at that picture in a long time, but it's one of my favorite photos from a cache site. And I found that I did not have it on my log. And so I just now uploaded it to my log for that cache. I logged it December of 2016. And yeah, that was a really fun one.
I've looked at that cache and it scares me just looking at the pictures. So.
What an interesting spot. I'm looking at some of the other folks' photos here now in the logs. That's an odd spot.
Now,
that's one way to put it.
I've been to the spot. I've looked at, I was willing to do it. And my wife, in one of the few times she's truly pleaded with me not to do something, said, do not do this. I do not want to lose my husband today. But today. It's not that extreme, but as we saw from Wrong Way Mommy, you know, some people, that's a fear that is going to be insurmountable.
Yeah.
And you know, for my wife, fear of heights is one of them. I looked at that and go, yeah, I can get down there and do that. There were a lot of people, and I was trying to plan my leap over the edge to be inconspicuous.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I could do it.
So it's just south
of... Now, Chris, you did it with a lot of people there, right?
Yeah, there were quite a few, because it's, you know, it's a viewpoint, and there were quite a few people there in the pull-out area along the 101, but nobody paid any attention. There were a few times that I looked over thinking people were going to be staring at me, and nobody was. It was remarkable how people were just doing their own thing, looking at the ocean, and pay no attention to the guy who's gingerly making his way down this, you know, this weird hill to get to a hole in the road. So it's, yeah, that was an interesting experience.
Weird.
So yeah, you do have to go down over the side of a small rock retaining, or not a retaining wall, but a wall there.
Yeah.
And there's a cable. You go down the hillside and underneath the road. Get this one. So, yeah, if you happen to be along the Oregon coast, this is a highly favorited cache.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
226 favorites and counting.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like an extreme challenge to me. And we're here tonight to talk all about caching challenges. Same. And we've already been chatting here with our guest, Chris Ronan, but I want to officially welcome you to our podcast here in episode 243. I'll talk all about caching challenges. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's always fun to talk caching with you guys.
Now, many of our listeners are going to know who you are. I mean, you're the infamous, the famous voice of Geocaching HQ, but tonight, we want to talk to you just as a cacher.
Just as a regular cacher, just a regular old guy.
Exactly. So, you know, I was going to say take off your HQ hat, but you're not wearing one. And but you do have the HQ shirt.
What does I think? I wouldn't know what I was thinking. I wore this to work today. That's why it's on me. I should have put something else on. Or cover it maybe. Put a...
piece of duct tape.
I can say whatever I want when this is covered, right? It's not
exactly. There you go. You're good. Exactly. We'll edit that out. We'll blur the shirt.
we're gonna fix it in post. We'll put a Munsey logo right there.
Oh yeah, that might be a small problem.
Oh, okay.
It wouldn't surprise me if Land Monkey did that. He's been very rough on me lately.
I've heard a little bit about that.
Yeah, I love the fact that Chris is the victim here.
You know, look, let's just get this out in the open because it's been bothering me.
Okay, I'm sorry that you're
so I think that Land Monkey has a reputation for being just a nice guy. You know, he doesn't bother anybody. He seems supportive. I mean, that's what I always thought. And then it's like, so a few weeks ago, I get an email from him or a message. And it's like, turns out he had come down into Washington, as he often does. He never tells me he's coming. He never like says, hey, you know, Chris, we're coming. No, it's none of that. He messages me and he says, hey, we found this cache that you DNF'd. And just gives me a picture of the log, just like, haha, we found it, you didn't. You stink, we're good. See you later. And I'm like, hey, you know, maybe if you're going to be going after a cache that I DNF'd, maybe you call me up, you say, hey, do you want to come maybe rectify your DNF with us? No, that's not how he does it. He sends me this terrible message and makes me feel bad. And I thought, gosh, you know, I thought, well, maybe that was a one-off thing. Maybe he was just having a bad day, whatever. But, you know, a few days go by, and I get another message from him. And again, it's just like, you know, I don't know where this is coming from, but he's like, hey, look, here's a screenshot of our friend league scores from this week. And look, I kicked your butt and ha, there you go again. And I'm like, dude, what the heck here? I mean, he's kicking me when I'm down, he kicks me when I DNF caches, he kicks me when I don't live up to him in friend league. And I'm just like, I thought this was just a nice Canadian guy. I mean, that's the impression I had.
So what's apparent to me is that Chris really doesn't understand coaching very well, because what I've noticed ever since I've started coaching him, his performance has increased exponentially. You're welcome.
So here's what I've done. I've started a bookmark list, and it's caches I have found that Land Monkey DNF'd. And as long as we're talking about challenges, I've set a personal challenge for myself.
Exceptional.
To log as many Land Monkey DNFs as I can. And so I'm working on that. And then, yeah, he's right. Friend League, I stepped my game up for 1 week at least, just to, you know, just to kind of get some of the anger out of myself, you know, because I didn't like feeling that way about Land Monkey. But I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that, I don't know. Do you guys get that from him? Does he kick you when you're down too? Or is that just something that he does with me for some reason?
Well, I will definitely agree. He never tells you when he's in the state, you know, so he'll just show up in Washington and go, oh yeah, by the way, I found all the caches on Whidbey Island this weekend. Like,
right. He just like, you know, you start seeing his name everywhere and you're like, oh, okay. You know, you were like next door to me, but whatever. It's fine.
You're an hour away, but no, you didn't tell me. So,
well, I would also like to point out that the number of times that I have come down previous to this whole scenario that Chris is sharing and said, hey, Chris, I'm coming down to Washington. And he said, oh yeah, I'm going to be in a different state.
That's never happened.
I'm going to be in Germany.
That's fake news. It's never happened. I don't know what he's talking about.
Alternative geocaching facts.
It's alternative geocaching facts. I'm not aware of that ever happening. The only time I just randomly, you know what? The one time we got to cache together, I just randomly ran into him, like in Mount Rainier, just like randomly. You know
how hard I was trying to avoid you.
I do know. It's here's the thing. So I was coming back home from the Tri-Cities Mega last year, and I'm going through Mount Rainier working on the Geo Tour, and we come upon this log, and we see Land Monkey signed it earlier in the day, and I'm like, he didn't tell us he was doing the Mount Rainier caches. So we made an effort, and we caught up to him, and he had to cache with us for a couple hours. It was like, you could tell he didn't like it. I mean, he went along with it, but it was Mrs. Land Monkey's a lot nicer, and so she kind of was pretending that, at least doing a better job of pretending that she was okay with us being around. But Land Monkey was, it was very, you could tell he was just humoring us at best.
Does he say sorry at the end?
What's that?
Does he say sorry after he rubs your nose in it?
Come to think of it, I think he did.
Because it's that.
Is that something?
Well, it's part of the coaching methodology. I'm sorry that you suck, and I'm trying to make you better.
This is Canadian coaching. Is that what this is?
Have you ever watched a hockey game?
Not lately, no. Okay. Is that how it works?
Went to the fights and a hockey game broke out.
That's right. Well, you know what? As entertaining as this is,
I'm just glad we got it out there so people know what's going on. And if there appeared to be any animosity, now you know what the deal is. I just want people to know. I just thought it was fair that everybody knew.
Well, speaking about Rock Chalk's various challenges, one of the things that he's also challenged with is trying to not complete every possible challenge that there is. So, you know, you're like the master of the Jasmer and the Fizzy and all that kind of stuff, which is why I push you when I see you DNF something. Like, dude, this is below you. Come on, step up your game. So, you know, what got you interested in the whole concept of going after geocaching challenges?
I was looking back earlier today through my, you know, the first ones that I found, the first challenge caches. And it was pretty quickly after I started caching. I think it was a lonely cache challenge in Kansas. And so that was the first one. But really for the first year or so, year or two, that there really weren't that many of them. It was just a handful. And then I got to know some caching friends that lived in Nebraska, and they were what you would call challenge hounds, and they were more into it. And, you know, I just, like a lot of people, once you've been playing the game for a few years, I think they tend to appeal to you a little bit more once you've been playing longer. And so I found myself looking out for them more after I'd been at the game for a couple years. And after some of them didn't seem as unattainable as they did early on, you know, I think it depends on the area. As I've been traveling around, I've found that some areas have challenge caches that are extremely difficult and, you know, very out there. And then others have ones that are a little bit more manageable. And the area that I was in had some that were pretty darn difficult. And you would look at them, especially as somebody who was relatively new to the game, and think, oh, there's just no way, you know, that I could do that. And once I'd been playing for a couple of years, that stuff started seeming a little bit more attainable, and I think that's when I got a little bit more into it.
Okay, well, speaking of people that are new to it, let's say somebody is new to challenges themselves. How would you tell them to get started? What advice would you give them? Maybe how do you locate the challenge caches themselves?
Well, since they're not their own type or have an attribute, you know, the main way is to search using the site or the at, well, the site if you're going to search by name, but search for mystery caches with challenge in the title, and that's going to pretty much show you where the challenge caches are. I mean, there are going to be some outliers that might have challenge in the title that's a mystery that happens to be just another kind of cache that isn't an actual challenge cache, but that'll get you most of them. And what I usually suggest to people is just kind of, you know, reading through them, getting an idea for what's available in your area, especially. And like for me, one thing that I learned over time was that, like, for instance, something that I always tell people is, one of the first things that I did in caching, one of the things that got me into it, was that in Kansas, the state parks were having a geocaching, they called it a contest, but what they did was they had put multi-caches at all of the state parks around Kansas. And my wife and I ended up traveling around over the course of several months and doing all of them. So we traveled all over the state, but this was before we knew anything about DeLorme challenges or county challenges. And so we skipped over entire counties and entire DeLorme pages, and later on looked back and thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe we were all the way in the southwest corner of the state and missed that little county there. and now we're going to have to drive 6 hours back to do it some other time. But so I tell people, kind of get an idea of what's out there, and maybe even when you're early in your caching, you'll have a chance to work on some stuff that, you know, might help you later.
That's true. And a lot of these can overlay one another. You can go and, you know, do caches on the way to, or so. Okay. So we located a challenge, but how do you go about fulfilling the challenge? I mean, some of these can be, 50, 75, 100 or more caches in order to be able to claim this single challenge cache. How do you check your progress? How do you know what you've done?
Well, I think other people probably do it a lot better than I do, but I've seen everything from Ben Hewitt at work, Ben and Jamie. Ben does a really great job of, I think, at least compared to me, of having his bookmark lists where he's keeping track of his progress. And then on the other side, I've seen people that just have these thick notebooks with all these scribbly things where that's the way that they keep track. What I found myself doing is, you know, I've got a Google Doc where I've got a list of everything I'm either working on, or stuff that maybe I've signed a challenge cache somewhere that I didn't qualify for, and it's something that I'm working on. And I try to regularly check that and see if I've made any progress. Or before I go on a trip, for instance, like I went down to Texas a couple weeks ago, and I try before the trip to go through that list and say, okay, is there anything in this area that I'm going to be in that might help me with one of these challenges I'm working on. But to be honest with you, I still screw up sometimes. And I got back from that trip from Texas and I realized I had this bookmark list of, I don't know, 300-400 caches before I left for my trip. And I got a lot of them. I found a ton of caches, but I realized there was this one random one that would have helped me with some random challenge. And now I'm going to have to go to Idaho or something to find the next closest one for that. So I don't know. I'm kind of always on the lookout to see how other people do it, because I think I'm pretty 1.0 with my approach. And I think there's some 2.0 and 3.0 stuff out there that would be a lot more effective than how I keep track of stuff.
I was expecting when you started to bring up Ben as an example, you were going to tell us that there's actually some secret code in the back end of the website that he's put in there just for himself for managing his challenge cache.
If he did, and he might, he wouldn't tell me. He would totally keep that a secret, but I'm not aware of one, but it would not surprise me if he, because he's a, you know, I hate to give it to him, but he's a pretty smart guy, and he could probably come up with some crazy thing. But yeah, when you look at Ben, he's got these, you know, he shows me his bookmark list and he's got Google Maps with targets and stuff, and I'm like, dude, you're totally so far ahead of me, it's crazy. So
that's pretty cool. So you've been on a lot of challenge caching adventures and a lot of just in general geocaching adventures. Do you have a story or two maybe to tell us about some of the craziest adventures you've taken, particularly with respect to trying to achieve a geocaching challenge?
Yeah, I think a couple come to mind for me. One is the Jasmer challenge is obviously one that a lot of people want to try to do. And completing it the first time for me, you know, there's only four August 2000 caches left, and one of them is in Utah at Potter's Pond. And when we were moving out here to Washington from Kansas, when I took the job with HQ, the shortest route would have been to go a northern route that went through like South Dakota and Montana and what have you, but a slightly longer route would have taken me through Utah, and Potter's Pond. And so we were willing to make that sacrifice and take a slightly longer trip. And I remember we ended up getting there very late in the day. It was near dark, and we got to the parking space, and Rachel said, "I'm not doing this. You can go ahead and go." So she stayed in the car, and it had rained fairly recently, and it was kind of a wet, slippery, there's some downfall that you have to get through that you had to get through. And it kind of ended up being a not super pleasant experience, but it's one of those things where, you know, I can still remember us driving those dirt roads and hoping we could get there before it got dark. And again, just thinking we totally could have gotten to Washington faster if we were like a few hours faster, if we would have gone this other way. But, you know, it was fun that we did it this way, and that enabled us to finish our Jasmer. So that was a memorable experience. And then also after doing that, of course, being like a lot of us cashers, you think, okay, I've done it once, I want to do it another time. And so in order to get to 2, 3, or 4 times Jasmer, you have to be able to get those other August 2000 ones. And so, for instance, that's why I ended up going after the one in Sweden. And I remember that day, similar to Utah, we were in Stockholm, and Rachel said, I'm not going to take a bus and a train and a bus and walk a mile or 2 miles. So we didn't have a car. It was a little bit of a journey to get out to the cache from Stockholm. And she said, I'm going to stay in Stockholm and do actual touristy stuff while you go off and do your crazy 4 times Jasmer thing. And so I did, and that was a fun little deal. Certainly a memorable experience. And same thing with then having to go to the one in Michigan. We made that part of a trip where we did Power Island while we were there, and then went off and did, is it Geocache 612? Is that what it's called in Michigan? I'm sure somebody out there is screaming at their computer going, I know what it is. But I actually have it all. Yeah. Geocache 612. And so again, I still remember that one because there was kind of a sandy road leading to it, and we were trying to figure out how far we could drive in our rental car and not get stuck, and then walking the rest of the way to get. So, you know, each one of those has a nice memory associated with it. And then the same thing with, you know, the other thing that I really like doing just personally is I like to see how many how far I can go with my fizzy grid. And that's led me to some really fun adventures. And I think probably the one that comes to mind the most is at one point I needed to get a 5.5 cache that had been placed prior to 2008 or something like that. And that led me down into Oregon to a paddle cache along some river. And it was just beautiful, and cache hadn't been found in a couple years, it's just fun stories like that and nice memories that have resulted from pursuing these crazy challenges.
Well, it sounds like it's been a lot of fun, and so for somebody that's joining us learning about challenges maybe for the first time, even now we've known what we've learned how to find them, maybe to do some searching and keywords and whatnot. But you mentioned Kansas and Texas and all the way to Sweden and even beyond into like Michigan and stuff. But if somebody wants to tackle some geocaching challenges, they learned about them, they say, hey, this sounds like fun. Are they going to have to travel the entire world to do this kind of thing? Or are there some that maybe somebody could stay well in the Northwest?
Well, that's what I was looking through my finds earlier today, I mentioned earlier, and I found that like the first few dozen or so, at least a couple dozen or more that I first found when I was living in Kansas, they were all in Kansas. I mean, there were plenty there that kept me busy, and I would have been fine continuing to to do those. But it's what I found is it's more when you start to get a little bit crazier about it and a little bit out of control, like I have, that ends up pushing you into doing. I mean, for instance, if you decide I want to max out the Jasmer grid, well, you're going to have to go to Sweden. That's just all there is to it. But if you want to do the Fizzy grid one time, you can totally do that within the Northwest. And so some of those classic things, like, you know, when I first started, you know, the classics are, I want to go on a streak for a year, for instance, or I want to finish the Fizzy grid, or I want to find, you know, a great thing for Northwest people is I want to find X number of old caches, mm-hmm. because the Northwest is a gold mine of old caches. I mean, I remember, well, it's funny, I say that coming from Kansas, where we have the oldest active cache in the world. But when I first moved out here, I was just like, oh my gosh, there's like 2001 caches. You practically trip over one every day, you know, they're just all over the place. So I think it kind of depends on where you live. And I think being in the Northwest, we have a really nice advantage here to have a lot of old stuff, a lot of interesting fizzy combinations that will help you finish your fizzy grid. You can make a lot of progress on the Jasmer grid here in the Northwest, just because the game started out here. So, mm-hmm. I think that you'd be hard pressed to find a better place to be than the Northwest to work on some of those classic kinds of challenges.
Amen, brother.
But you're going to have to go to Kansas to get that oldest one. You're going to have to go to my old stomping grounds.
That's true. And even, you know, the much hated Michigan. Since I come from Ohio, we're not allowed to go into Michigan. You know, I would just to be able to complete that challenge.
I'm sure if he was here, Daryl W. Four would take issue with you.
It's okay. He doesn't listen to this podcast, so we're good.
Yeah.
He was supposed to join us last year when we went to Power Island, and unfortunately he got ill, or maybe his wife got ill, and unfortunately he couldn't join us. But yeah, that was, again, largely driven by challenge craziness, you know, wanting to get Geocache 612, and I think that got us to triple Jasmer, you know, in May of last year. And then, no, was that, maybe that was the fourth. That might have been maxing it out. But that, you know, I think it was because we were in Sweden in April. So yeah, that Geocache 612 was the last one that we needed for the fourth Jasmer. So
cool.
It's cool, but it's ridiculous. I'm the first one to admit it's absolutely ridiculous. I remember that, and I mentioned that I'm absurd about the fizzy grid. And it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving for me, because, you know, you can just keep going. I mean, it's I'm not doing it to pursue any kind of a challenge cache. I mean, cause there's nothing that I'm aware of for filling your fizzy grid 50 times, but that's the silly stuff that I try to, and that's the thing. The other thing I kind of tell people is just even if there's don't restrict yourself to just setting goals that are tied to a challenge cache. I mean, you can set crazy goals for yourself or fun, the stuff that makes sense to you that might not be tied to an actual cache. And I've done that quite a bit with the fizzy grid. You know, it's just something that's fun for me personally. And I've met other people that have other stuff that's kind of fun to them, and they like to, you know, see how much they can find of a certain cache type, or how many old caches they can find, or whatever. They just set those kind of goals for themselves that don't necessarily have to be tied to a challenge cache that's out there too. So, you know, that's something that's also there to keep in mind.
That's a good point. And I think even if you're not going after a particular challenge cache, for some of the more common things that people perceive as, you know, scoring challenges, or however you want to look at it, in to keep the game interesting, Project-GC has some great tools in there for helping you plan where to go after those caches. We use that quite a bit because it'll check your stats and say, oh, well, you know, if you're trying to do your second round on your fizzy grid, here's the caches in Washington or in BC that need to be on your radar. So
yeah, that's a great point. It really is a fantastic site, and it's got, I've probably only scratched the very surface of what's available there. There, in fact, I remember I was at Ben's computer a few weeks ago, and I was, we were talking about something, and he said, oh, you can look that up here on Project GC. And he, you know, goes drop down menu, looks at this, and I'm like, all right, I had no idea that was there. So, and I, last year when I was in Sweden, I got to spend some time with Magnus, who runs that website. And I asked him, what do you think is the best feature of this site? And he started talking to me about their virtual GPS feature. And I kind of laughed. I said, I hate to admit this, but I have no idea. I've never used this before. So I'm going to have to go home and play around with this. So I, yeah, it's a great site. And certainly if you're in, if you find yourself getting involved in challenge caching, it's indispensable for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It also has challenge checkers. And if you are a premium member, it will run those automatically for you and tell you, oh, by the way, you qualify for all these. Go find them. Yeah. So that's really nice. Now, I just see here in the chat that Three Hams says he's one cash shy of a double fizzy. So watch out. He's coming for you there.
That's awesome. That really is cool. I mean, I distinctly remember the first time that I finished my fizzy grid, and I met a guy who at that time said that he was working, I think at that point, on his 30th fizzy grid. He was trying to loop it for the 30th time. And I remember saying to him, you are absolutely insane. There is, why would anybody have that as, that's such a crazy goal. I mean, I can't even imagine. And of course, you know, 3-4 years later, I'm just as ridiculous as he is. So that's super cool. I mean, I love hearing about people finishing their first or their second or whatever. I mean, it's and like I said before, it's the gift that keeps on giving. You just keep going with it, which is part of what I really like about that particular challenge.
I was just amazed when you said, oh yeah, I'm working on my, you know, 47th. I'm like, what? That's not even realistic to me.
Yeah. I need to look and see. I'm actually not sure where I'm at. I'm in the 40s somewhere, but let's see here.
So that's
44.
Yeah. 44. So up here in BC, I don't know about down, I haven't really looked too carefully down in Washington, but up here in BC, it's tough to get multiple laps on your fizzy. The bulk of the caches tend to just be, well, and I think that's anywhere. The bulk of the caches tend to be sort of the lower, or mm-hmm. you know, the upper left-hand quadrant of the grid. But when you're trying to look at that lower right-hand, you know, there's some combinations that just are really, really rare, and they're hard to find.
Yeah, that's true. And one thing that really, well, I think back to kind of some of the tools that I've ended up accumulating because of my fizzy obsession, and the biggest one is the kayak. I mean, that certainly made a huge difference for me, because I've T5 stuff was really not something that I thought much about until I got a kayak, so I've become a lot more experienced with that but you know, it's funny, Jay, I think I emailed you a few months ago and I asked you about that area. What was it? Was it north of Victoria or something that had a lot of one difficulty, 3.5 terrain caches, or it was some weird DT combination. And there's a bunch of them in this one particular spot. And it's just one of those, for me, a more rare combination. Okay. And so that's why I was like, oh my gosh, I gotta, and I think I asked you, does it get snowy during the winter in this spot? Because I was thinking about going up there one weekend, and we haven't done it yet, but I'm sure we will, because it's, but so when, yeah, cause when I'm traveling, that's what I'll do. I'll start looking and seeing, oh, is there a 1.5, or is there a, I think 1.4 is one that I was trying to do in Texas a couple weekends ago. And so I just ended up in a couple of very random locations climbing trees because there was a 1.4 someplace. So, yeah, you know, it's the silly thing that I do.
But we also have a kayak, but I have to say the coolest tool for fizzy challenges I've seen that you have is that collapsible ladder. That thing is awesome.
Oh yeah, the telescoping ladder. That's something that I first bought when I was living in Kansas, because there were a lot of caches in Nebraska and Iowa in particular where you really needed a ladder. And the other thing you really needed there was a pole. There were a lot more caches that were like hangers that were up in trees that you would need a pole to fish down. Okay. And the other thing that really came in handy in the Midwest was, what was the official name for them? It was like a, I don't know, I'll look it up. It was something that helped you get up into trees, and hunters use them to get up into deer stands. They essentially creates a ladder for themselves with these, I got to look it up.
Thinking of a tree strap. You put it around the tree and you can, you know, pull yourself up with it, but
something like that. Yeah. But, so yeah, it's kind of funny how it kind of depends on the region. I mean, there's certain areas where different tools are more indispensable than others. I mean, I got out here and I've hardly needed my pole at all, you know, whereas if I'm going to be in Nebraska or Iowa, I better have it with me in order to get certain things. Whereas you're not going to need your kayak as much in Nebraska or Iowa as you do out here in the Northwest. So just kind of that's kind of one of the cool things about the game is that, you know, the tots are going to vary depending on where you are.
Good point.
Which is why that telescoping ladder is a great tool, because when you're traveling, you can throw it in the trunk and it's a nice thing to have if the need may arise.
Yeah, that's on the birthday list for this year for sure.
You know, it's funny. When I was in Texas a couple weeks ago, one of the first things I did, I went to the Texas Challenge. It was in Denton, which is just north of Dallas. And when I got into Denton, I stopped by a Harbor Freight Tools and bought a little grabber tool, you know, like you use to pick up trash with, you know, one of those. And I found that to be very handy in Texas, because they had a lot of, you know, little blinky caches or whatever that were up on metal poles and stuff. And so you would need a grabber to reach up there with. So, just for, I think it was $3 at Harbor Freight, just bought myself a grabber and then donated it to somebody on the way out of town because I knew I wouldn't be able to get it back in my luggage. So, the tools we buy.
Exactly. Now, Land Monkey likes to use the phrase cash safely and cash often. I prefer to say get out and get caching. Either way you say it, how often do you get out and get caching? Because it seems like, as you're talking here, you must be going out every day. You've got these specialized tools of yours, and out you go looking for, you know, T5 caches every day.
Now, it's funny. Somebody asked me today if I had already finished Planetary Pursuit, and I said I haven't even started yet because I haven't. I don't usually cache on weekdays. But pretty much every weekend day. I mean, that's pretty much what I'm doing for at least part of every Saturday and Sunday. And then certainly when I went to Texas, that was a trip that, in that, you know, most of the time my wife and I travel together and she likes to cache and that works out, but she will rein me in to some degree. I mean, she doesn't let me get too insane, but when I'm left to my own devices, like I was in Texas, it was wire to wire every day. It got light enough at 6:30 in the morning. It didn't get dark until 7 o'clock, and I was at it from start to finish. And so for what it was at, 4 days. I was just going crazy all day, every day. And of course, now I've been going to bed at 9 o'clock for the last week because I'm having to recover from those 4 days. But so when I'm on vacation, it's pretty much every day. On the weekends, it's pretty much at least part of each day. But the weekdays, traditionally, I don't get a chance to get out much just because of how early I go in. And then, as you guys know, here in the Northwest, you know, during the winter, not much you can do after, you know, 4 o'clock, 4:30. Yeah. But now that, you know, it's into April or almost into April, it's kind of nice. There's a couple of daylight hours left there at the end of the day. So maybe I'll be able to start doing a little something in the evenings.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And they'll stay late or light until 10 o'clock and during the summer, and you think you can get everything done.
I can clean out this park, no problem.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's awesome. Hey, so talking about challenge caches, one of the other things that, of course, people are always curious about, and Chris, we're going to, even though you accidentally wore the shirt, we're going to respect the fact that you're not officially speaking for H2. But if someone's interested in creating a geocaching challenge cache unofficially, what advice would you have for them besides talk to your reviewer first?
You know, the thing I tell people is familiarize yourself with the guidelines so that you know what the parameters are, and then familiarize yourself with what's already in your area, because you want to try to come up with something that's unique and something that the people will enjoy doing, you know, not just putting out something just for the sake of doing it, but something that's actually going to be interesting to folks and will motivate them to want to go out and maybe do something a little different than what they've done in the past. And then have it something that is interesting to you, because, you know, one of the guidelines is you have to have qualified for the challenge. So you want it to be something that you've done or that you're interested in doing so that maybe you can work towards it. And then after you've qualified, you can maybe put out a challenge for that. So those are just some of the basic parameters that I suggest to people. But certainly the number one would be to familiarize yourself with the guidelines so that you know what the possibilities are.
Very cool.
And also, you know, one other thing I should say is I've been inspired at times by just seeing stuff when I'm traveling to other places, and I may see, oh, that's a neat challenge that people in my area might enjoy. And I haven't been a person, I think I've only put out one challenge cache ever. So it's not something that I've personally done much with, because I feel like the places that I've lived, other people have put out the stuff that I would have thought was interesting already. But there have been a few times when I've seen something when I'm traveling and I've thought, oh, that's kind of cool. Maybe I could think about doing that back where I live.
Very cool. I have to ask you, I think we've talked about this before, but have you ever gone after the Challenge Bear up by Kelowna in British Columbia?
We did. We went up there last year, actually. Okay. And the most memorable thing about that was we had a flat tire. You know, that's we did talk about it, Jay, because I was telling you about that tire place in Canada that's amazing. What's that place called?
I think that was Cal Tire.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, man. They're amazing. I even thought about when we needed tires on our car a few months ago, I thought about driving up to Canada just to go back to that place. They were so nice. We were out on this trail, and we got a flat tire, and we managed to get back into town like 5 minutes before they were going to close. And I was for sure, because I've been to places where you go in 5 minutes before they close, and they say, oh, we're not going to be able to get to you. We're about to, you know, it was Friday night. I thought these guys want to go home. So they say, no, go ahead and pull your car in. So we pulled it in. They had to patch it or something. And then they just gave us a receipt and said, you're good. And I said, no, how much is that going to be? And they're like, no, it's not a big deal. It's free. Just you're fine. Have a nice weekend. And I'm like, man, you Canadian guys, that's where I got the feeling that you folks were nice. And then I was around you more, Jay, I realized you're a little rougher around the edges than I realize, but those folks at Cal Tire, they were okay.
There you go. Well, you know,
they're real Canadians.
Hey, whoa, easy there, cowboy.
I think I even thought about asking you if you would want to go to that, Jay, but then I saw you'd already done it. So
yeah, we did that, and actually a few of the folks in the chat tonight have done it as well. I've been talking about that, but yeah, if folks are thinking about coming up to British Columbia, that's, and you love challenge caching, that's definitely one to check out. It's a great set of FSRs, Forest Service Roads. Mm-hmm. Bring a spare tire, I guess. and the caches are generally fairly straightforward to find. There's nothing like super difficult about them. But what's difficult is making sure you qualify for all the caches before you go after them.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, it was a pretty attractive area, and we were there in July, maybe, or it was in the summer. It was very pretty. It's a very nice spot, you know, and it's not too terrible of a drive, you know. So, coming from here in the Seattle area, so certainly if you're further north, it's even easier. So, yeah, it's one I would recommend to people.
There you go. Awesome. Well, you know, we're going to invite you to stick around, Chris, to talk to us in the after show, if you don't mind.
Sure.
That worked. Yeah. Awesome. And we're going to start wrapping the show up. So the first thing we want to do is thank our faithful Denali level supporters. That's Bounce Bounce, Team Squirrel, and WorldCaching.com. Thank you guys very much for that Denali level support. Folks, if you want to know more about supporting the show, make sure, as I said before, you click that Patreon link on the CachingNW.com website. And now, the moment that no one's been waiting for, unless your name is in the 20 people that I'm about to read. Yes. Thank you to all of our supporters. Guys, we just, you know, we say it every week, but we really, really appreciate the fact that you invest in us and helping us to make sure we can put this show on every week. It really means a lot to us. So thank you. B Pendragon, Broncos Fan for Life, Sprouter, Camp Clan, Tick Magnet, Kev MacD, Subway Mark, Doramore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, Geo Nav Pros, Wino Seattle, Akerdoc, OBX Geek, Billy Robson, Nice, Antaeus, and Keats 94. Thank you, every one of you guys, very much.
Bravo, bravo. Well, as you mentioned, we're bringing this episode to a close, but maybe between now and next week, people might want to reach out and get in touch with us. So we'll let our guest go first, Mr. Rock Chalk. How would you like people to reach out and connect with you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've been ashamed of it a few times. I tell people I'm on Instagram, and I am, and Twitter, and you can check me out there. But I'm hit or miss on whether or not I'm good about posting photos and stuff. But if you're going to find me, it's at Chris Ronan on Twitter, and then Geo Rock Chalk on Instagram.
There you go. I definitely would encourage people to follow your Instagram there. I, you know, maybe it's not consistent posting, but when you do post, it's always something interesting.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, how about you, Land Monkey?
So for us, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope, it's at LandMonkeyGC. We encourage people to follow us as well. And, you know, if you're looking at Facebook, we're Team LandMonkey, and on YouTube, well, just look for LANMONKEY, LandMonkey on YouTube. And of course, the blog is landmonkey.blogspot.ca. Wits End, my friend, where do folks find you?
I'm here, there, and everywhere. I'm more of a social media consumer than a creator, but I have been known to throw a few things out there. Probably the easiest is to reach out to Twitter or just right there at geocaching.com in the messaging feature. I am Wits End at both places. And Chris of the Northwest, our illustrious host here. How about you?
I don't know if I'm illustrious, okay. But I'm a host.
You're our illustrated host? No.
Oh,
that's different.
You know, look for Caching NW. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook. Those are the places I'm more active than others. You know, you can always hit me up on geocaching.com. That's Chris of the Northwest. You know, you can also go over to cachingnw.com/host and read the bios, find out all the links that we just mentioned, and a few secret ones that we don't tell anybody about. We just want to see if you go out and read it. That's all we're looking for. But most of all, we want to say thank you. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Caching in the Northwest. Don't forget that you can be part of the show. Call 253-693-TFTC and leave us a comment, ask a question, or let us know when you're in the area looking for challenge caches any time of the day or night. Of course, you can email us at feedback@cachingnw.com. Your support helps keep quality shows coming. If you like this show, please click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. This show is produced by Chris Umfenauer and Jay Kennedy, hosted by Chris J. and Jim Paulwitz. The show's licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, copyright 2018 by Chris Umfenauer. And folks, we urge you to stay tuned for
the After Show.
Ooh, there you have it. The After Show. Folks, if you're new to caching in the Northwest, the After Show is just the time where we have a chance to bring up some topics that don't necessarily fit well in the main show or have been brought up by the folks listening and watching tonight and in the chat. So if you want to bring something up, just use the hashtag FTAS, F-T-A-S, for the After Show, and we'll talk about it. Mr. Land Monkey, why don't you start us off tonight?
Sure. So GeoNavPros earlier on in the show mentioned hashtag FTAS. It was slightly misspelled there, but I know what he was going after. It's the BC CacheCon 2018. So if you haven't heard of this event yet, it's GC7KFRR.
Kentucky Fried Railroad.
Kentucky Fried Railroad, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's pretty much everything you need to know about the event.
Okay.
Check out that page or that event page, GC7KFRR, or you can go check out our website at, what is it? It's bccachecon.wordpress.com. And what we're doing is we're putting on a pretty cool event in partnership with the city of Richmond. And we're going to have, it's kind of running like a convention. There's going to be breakout speakers and topics on identifying plants and trees, on getting started for geocaching for folks who are new to it. There's going to be some advanced geocaching topics. We're going to have wilderness first aid taught by an actual first aid safety guy. We're going to have the Vancouver Photography Club is coming to teach a session on how to take better pictures when you're outdoors. So it's going to be a great time, a fun day. We're going to have vendors set up. We're going to have all kinds of cool and crazy stuff and just invite people to come out and really enjoy the day. That is Sunday, May 6th.
Nice. And again, that's GC7KFRR. That's Kelowna Fried Railroads.
Well, you know, Kelowna Fried Railroads, that probably reminds me of when the trestles burned down in Kelowna.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Closer to home than you thought with that one.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, at CacheCon, your Caching in the Northwest hosts are planning to be there. So you might want to come by and say hi. It's always fun to see you guys.
I think if we can, what we're thinking about doing is actually possibly doing a live show during the lunch break.
I love it.
So we'll see if we can pull that off. That'd be fun.
Because, I kind of like to stay alive after the lunch break too, if that's not a problem.
All right.
Okay. Thanks.
Additional fee maybe, but
there you go. So Chris, invitation to you and all the folks at HQ to come on up if you're interested.
I will spread the word. I will be in London that day, actually. Awesome. Yeah. So I have a good excuse. Otherwise I would totally like to come up there for that.
Okay, what challenge, Cash, are you going after? There's a reason you're going to London. You're just not vacationing.
Actually, I actually will be vacationing when I'm in London, but I'm sure that there will be plenty of caching involved while we're there. We've never actually been to. I've flown through London before, but mm-hmm. have never been able to spend any time there. And there's. I'm really looking forward to that, not just for caching, but for just other regular cool stuff to see. So we're looking forward to that adventure.
Very cool.
That's nice. I spent a couple of days in London, and it was quite interesting. I will tell you this. The closest I've ever been to carsick was driving in, or actually riding in the passenger seat in London. Just something in my brain said I should have a steering wheel in front of me. And there's no way you should be able to make these corners the way you do. And it's just... I actually did better in the back seat than I did in the front.
We have this awesome home movie that we took a lot of video when we were first married, and we were traveling through Europe and spent almost a week in England. And we're up north in the Derbyshire area, and I'm driving a standard. And Laura's got the video camera, and she's filming me, and she's asking me questions, and it's just like this. I'm just focused on the road and what I'm doing. I'm like, yep.
Yeah, we have no intention of driving while we're in London. I'm taking the bus and the train anywhere I need to go. When we went to Ireland about 10 years ago, we did rent a car, and it was my first time driving on the left side of the road. It was actually kind of fun, but I was very worried about it going into it. And then it turned out, I kind of felt like I got the hang of it pretty quickly and everything worked out for me, but I have no intention of trying to drive in London itself. That would be, not a good ending for me, I don't think.
Well, that's the beauty of cities like that in Europe, is you really don't have to drive. Like, their transit systems are
right.
Amazing that you really don't need to do that. But Chris, I noticed over in the chat here, for a challenge casher like you, it looks like the church micro challenge is one that's being promoted.
Oh my gosh, there are so many church micros. It's crazy. Yeah, I've heard a lot about that for sure.
Yeah, I remember when Mark used to do his geocaching podcast, I'd always be hearing about the church micros.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
What's the railroad or
series that they have that Subway Mark was trying to expand that into the U.S. I'm trying to remember what it's called.
Exactly. I can't come up with it.
All railroad related.
Railroad, rail stops.
Yeah.
Something. Yeah. They've got a huge series of those. And it's kind of this loose sidetrack, the tried sidetrack series. Thanks. Thank you, Bri Lang and Dora Moore. I knew if I just mangled it long enough, somebody would come up with the right answer.
Just keep struggling for a while and people get tired of it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, we just get it right. Okay, we'll give them the right answer if you'll be quiet. The sidetrack series is a pretty loose conglomeration of railroad related caches, and from the ones I've read, I was like, I've got to go see these look incredible.
Right on. I'm going to jump one of the fatas we have here, because the next one, I noticed Rock Chuck, you had a response to Three Hams and a Rose on it. He said, you want a T5, check out, I think it's pronounced Kleewaks Lake in Oregon. He said, each year the local cachers publish 15 to 20 T5 caches with multiple difficulty ratings, all requiring a kayak. And then they archive and republish them the next year. And Chris, you seem to be familiar with those ones.
Yeah, it's a beautiful lake. Honeyman State Park, which is not too far north of Coos Bay. They're kind of in southern Oregon along the coast. Just a beautiful lake, and yeah, there's caches all along the shoreline of the lake, and you just paddle up, and they're usually in trees and what have you along the shoreline. But it's a great deal, or it worked out really well for us, because we take my hard shell kayak, and then we have a inflatable that we'll take that Rachel uses. And so the way the lake works is there's a couple of branches to it, so I would go up you know, to the top of each branch and come back down, and there's caches along, you know, as you're going up and then coming back down. And, you know, Rachel would just kind of paddle around, you know, not going all the way to the top, and just kind of wait for me to come back and then go up the other arm and then come back down. And so it's a, but it's just really beautiful. I really enjoy it there. So yeah, that's a place I would very highly recommend to people.
Sounds like you'd need a couple of days to do that.
You could. I tend to do it in a day just because I tend to plow through stuff. But yeah, the more leisurely thing to do would be to to take your time and spend a weekend. And they've got plenty of camping opportunities there too, which we've never taken advantage of. We usually stay down in North Bend or Coos Bay, but they do have camping there, and there's, each time I've been, there's been plenty of folks that are doing that. And then there's also hiking trails there in the park, and there's caches on the hiking trails. So yeah, there's even if you only want to find some of the kayaking stuff, or maybe you want to find all of it and then do some of the trails, yeah, it would be a really fantastic weekend.
Sounds like a great hashtag geocache road trip to me.
Right. And then I'll tell you what, there are, it's not just that lake, but then there are rivers and other lakes there along the coast. You can, I had a little bit of a, probably one of my scarier caching experiences there. Last year, there's a river not too far north of that state park, that I had been on the previous year and had no problems. And this time when I went on it, I happened to be there when the tide was rushing out into the ocean a little faster than I thought it was. Oh, okay. And I was paddling along, and I wasn't even having to really paddle because the current was moving fast enough where I was just kind of like, oh, this is great. I'm just kind of not even having to work. This is awesome. And a couple of times I turned around and just to make sure I could paddle upstream, and I could, and I thought everything was fine. And I was coming up to this point in the river where there was a huge tree that was across the width of the river, just this monster tree that had fallen years and years, you know, it's been there forever. And I remembered it from the year before, and I see it, and I'm like, okay, when I get up to it, I'll just, you know, kind of put my hands on it and duck under it, and which is what I had done the previous year. Well, I got up to it and put my hands on it, and the current was running so fast that I couldn't, I just like slid, it just went, the kayak kept going. And wow. It was this, and so right there in that moment, I basically capsized, and I had my right leg in the kayak, like holding on to it to keep it from continuing on a journey that would have ended in the Pacific Ocean. And I was like, I had my arm on the tree trunk. I had my leg in the kayak, and I just had this moment of, oh my gosh, what am I going to do here? And Rachel would kill me if she saw this, but she was back in the parking lot in the car reading a book, waiting for me to come back, blissfully unaware of what was happening to me. And I was just like, okay, just take a breath, think about this for a second, figure this out. What do you need to do first? And so I'm like, okay, is the paddle still here? Yes, it is. It's still in the kayak. I reached down, put it on top of this big tree. And then I was like, I've got to figure out a way to get this kayak up out of the water so that I can get it up, flip it over, get the water out of it, and have some chance of getting back into it. And anyway, long story, I ended up managing to do that. I had a pair of boots that both were lost. I have no idea where they are now. but it was a very scary deal. And I just wrote a blog post for the geocaching blog about paddle caching, and it'll publish here in the next few weeks or so. But that was one of the stories that I alluded to about just being very aware of safety when you're out kayaking. And I think I'm aware of it, but sometimes you're reminded that nature always has the upper hand. So As much fun as I've had on lakes and streams, I've gotten myself into some stupid situations on a couple of rivers. So the moral of the story is stay on that lake in Honeyman State Park and don't do anything stupid on rivers like I do.
I think Graham said that's possibly the Suslaw River.
That sounds familiar. I think that may be the case.
All right. There you go. Okay. So don't do that.
Yes.
Would I say not as I do? Yeah. Okay.
Got it. That's right. That's right.
We did skip over a comment. I'm going to go back to it. A hashtag Fatas from Keats. Keats94 said it's day 169 of his finding streak. He's really enjoying seeing new caches getting published. I guess it always helps when you're on a streak. He's trying to hit 366 days. He says, I have to plan strategically. And he says he's really only doing this to make sure that he qualifies for challenges. There you go. So congrats, Keats. That's 169 days is an achievement unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
So
indeed.
You're well on your way there.
If I could give a shout out to one of my fellow coworkers, her username is Ingenuous. She's one of our web developers at HQ, and she had a streak that I want to say was up around 160, 170, something like that. And it ended about a week ago when she had a baby. It was funny because she had been keeping the streak up, and the question we were all wondering, is she going to be able to keep it going when she has her baby? And so she had her baby, she shared pictures with the company, and of course one of the first questions was, is the streak alive? and she said, no, the streak ended on the day. I wasn't able to do anything that day, so it's over. So
I was otherwise occupied by having a baby. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. But it was really cool to see her keep this streak going for as long as she did, and it was just kind of fun to watch people get excited about, is she going to be able to keep it going? Oh no, she didn't. But
I can't imagine.
A nice consolation prize.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, and by the way, how's the baby?
Pregnant. Yeah. Wow. I think having a baby gives you a couple of days off, and you still can continue the streak after that.
Oh, you think so?
I think you should be able to continue the streak, yeah. I don't think that should count as a break. Having a baby is one of those exceptions. Hey, Keats also threw out another tip. He says, once you've filled your DT grid, take a screenshot. You never know when the cache owners may adjust the difficulty or terrain numbers of a cache. So,
yeah, I've definitely had that happen where I was like, hey, wasn't I at such and such number fizzy? And then I look and I see that I'm one less than I thought. And it turns out somebody had changed a DT on me, which kind of drives me crazy. But yeah, it's a good idea to try to keep track of that with a screenshot every so often.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, we've got smart people that listen to this show. I think if you listen to this show, that makes you one of the smart people.
Yeah, smarter than the people who host the show.
Exactly. Because, I mean, you know, we don't know what we're talking about. We just read what other people have written, and it makes us look somewhat smart.
You know, I was just looking at my coworker's profile. I didn't give her enough credit. She was up to 356 days.
Mm, wow.
When her streak ended on the 12th.
So close
close to a year. Ugh.
Oh my goodness. What are you going to do? Right. Oh.
Yeah. Well, she's back at it though. Now she's found three. I just see she's found three in a row. She missed a week, but now she's back at it. So good for her.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is impressive.
Yeah.
Let's see. IHAM writes, just looked at Project GC. I'm closer to my Jasmer than I realized. So
awesome.
There you go. I'll help you go find all those.
Congrats, I am.
I'm sure I need them too.
There you go.
There's always virtual caches. This is GeoNav Bros. She could be doing virtuals.
Oh yeah, bounce in the chat. I skim read what he wrote, and I was like, did I understand that? And I did understand it correctly. He says, I've had someone ask me to change a difficulty on a cache to help their stats. I'm like,
wow.
Maybe not. Oh, dear.
Well, and IHAM says, as a cache owner, I've had to change the terrain rating on one of my caches. After about 10 years, there was too much overgrowth.
Okay, so, yeah, I guess I can see that if it was like something significant happened to the area and it changed dramatically, I can understand that, but it would still be kind of annoying.
Right.
That happened. But, you know, that's one situation that IHAM's talking about, but what Bounce Bounce is saying, when someone says, hey, I just need to fill a spot on my grid. Yeah. Can you just...
just adjust that for me. Then you can put it back.
Yeah.
Right. No, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm speaking for Bounce Bounce.
Yeah.
Well, I assume that's what he's going to say, but I'm not going to put words in his mouth.
There you go. Awesome. Well, that's what do you guys think? We've pretty much tapped out the subject matter there for tonight.
I think so.
Chris, thanks again for being on the show. I mean, not only do you have this incredible wealth of geocache finds, but your multiple completions of challenge caches are very impressive. And as a result, you got some really good stories.
Yeah, that's true. The stories do tend to pile up over time.
And we're glad that you're still around.
As am I. Yes, I have put myself into some situations that were not the smartest, but I'm still standing, and I've gotten slightly smarter over time. So,
is this going to be one of those podcasts Rachel isn't allowed to listen to?
You know what? She actually messaged me about an hour ago, just with a couple of exclamation points. That's all it said. So I
have a chat later. Okay.
So I think we're going to be having a talk later. Yeah.
Chris, I'm sorry. I didn't want you to get in trouble.
Oh dear. Oh,
awesome. Maybe she's looking to buy you a new pair of boots.
There you go. That's got to be
it. I'm sure that's what it is. I'm sure that's what it is.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was great talking with you. Some great stories.
Always great having you here.
Always fun to be with you guys.
Folks, until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.